This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One, Seat One podcast. That was the soothing sounds of Bobby Brown, in my opinion, the king of R&B, as Whitney Houston called him. Seriously, New Edition started so much in R&B. If you ever get a chance, watch the New Edition story that BET put out. It is an absolute treat. This is Ben, a.k.a. Boston Nuga, a.k.a. the biggest New Edition fan of the planet. New Edition's obviously from Boston, too, so I'm a little bit biased. This week, we have on AC Mack. AC Mack, if you haven't seen him wrestle, is an unbelievable wrestler and a hell of a talker. He is a star of the Southern independent scene, and he is the champion at Action Wrestling. Action Wrestling has a show this Friday in Tyrone, Georgia, if you can make it out. It is just south of the Atlanta airport. They put on one heck of a show. I'm actually bringing Ava to her first Out of the City of Chattanooga show at Action Wrestling this week. So that's going to be a blast. It's always fun to bring your kids to shows. And this is our first real road trip that we're bringing Ava to. So that'll be a lot of fun. Big week this week in sports. The Raptors won the NBA title. Confirmed shoot Matt. Big ups, brother. And the St. Louis Blues defeated the Bruins. Boo. Big ups to Tommy there. Tommy was right. And I'm going to get hit with a fluorescent light tube at SCI for my troubles for rooting on the Bruins there. So that is the week. We're going to be bringing on AC Mack in a second here. But a little bit about Place to Be Nation. And the Place to Be Nation pop feed and the latest talk and pop, Jenny and Tim interview each other and share summer memories in a rare guest list episode. The seventh installment of the Lapin Theater features Miranda Berthold and Andy watching Men in Black. The hard-traveling fanboys kick off X-Men month with edition of Countdown, in which they provide their complete 1101 rankings of the X-Men cinematic universe. Pop Goes the Movies with Scott Criscolo and J. Arsenio D'Amato's review of the Elton John biopic Rocket Man. The NBA team is back with Gone Fishing Part 3, where Adam and Andrew stay in the East, and then Part 4 delve in the basement of the Eastern Conference. Sunday Groove is back with host David Sunday talking songs by Elton John and Chris Cornell. On June 23rd, the reboot of the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament kicks off. There'll be six polls a day posted for round one. That's going to be a fun tournament, actually. I'm already kind of brewing where I want to go with that. You can get in the action on Facebook by searching PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s tournament and liking the page. Now, be sure to weigh in. That's going to be real fun. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, on a new wrestling war zone, JT and Chad dive into Raw and Nitro from 1/15/96. Making Towns of Friends features Steve Williams recounting his experience training in Ohio Valley Wrestling. That was one hell of a show by Steve. Real fun story there. After a six-month hiatus, Steve Benner and Peter Winston reunite to discuss their 10 favorite single-season sports teams of all time in the Adams Division podcast. That was a fun show as well. On Row 1, Seat 1 of my eighth episode, I continue my road trip diaries with an interview with Mikey Bland to discuss Black Label Pro Wrestling. Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey recapped New Japan Dominion, New Japan Classic match picks, and the newest edition of Main Event. And on PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 kicks off with a commentary on the Best Picture nominees for the 66th Academy Awards, continuing with a piece on the 94 World Cup. Oh man, the 94 World Cup was awesome. Alexi Lalas, Tony Miola, and those acid-washed, the denim-looking jerseys that the 94 U.S. World Cup team, the 94 World Cup was choice, man. Check out our social media pages and message boards at bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining the GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your lists. And now we are going to have on AC Mack.
Oh, yes. It's me. I'm crazy. I'm here with AC Mack, one of the up-and-coming rising stars of the Southern independent scene. AC, thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited.
The AC is, where are you champion right now? I know you're champion of Action Wrestling. That's where I know you from, but you've held a couple belts.
Yeah, I've held a couple. So in the span of 3 years, I've won 15 different championships. Well, I've had 15 different championship reigns.
Wow.
I should say that. Yeah. So right now I'm the Action champion, and I'm also the Disruptor heavyweight champion.
That's amazing. That's within 3 years.
Within 3 years, yes.
That shows a lot of trust.
Yeah.
So let's start from the beginning. When did you first fall in love with wrestling?
So I had to be in elementary school, because around the end of the Attitude Era is when I kind of started to kind of watch kind of on and off. But it wasn't until about the summer of 2003 to where I really latched on and became like an avid fan. So around the time when they were gearing up for that second Elimination Chamber, that was when I was kind of in it for the long haul.
So you were all WWE then?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't play with WCW at all.
Oh, really? Because you're a young man. I keep on forgetting this here. We're, you know, a lot of the listeners of this podcast and myself, I'm in my mid-30s. You're a young man. You missed that whole wave of us flipping back from Nitro and Raw every single night and stuff like that. You came right into WWE.
I wasn't so stressed out during that. But yeah, I came right towards the end, right after the victory, pretty much, of the Monday Night Wars is when I came in.
Now, are you one who goes back and watches old stuff, or did you just dive right in when you dove right in?
I went back and watched some old stuff, but I'll be honest with you, and I get a lot of flack from this from my peers. It is extremely hard for me to enjoy the majority of footage before, like, 96.
Really?
Yeah, anything before that, you're like, you got to pull some teeth to get me to watch it. Unless it's like obviously, like the Ric Flair or, you know, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or something like that. If it's not one of those guys, I'm like, man, do we have to go back that far? Do we have to watch the 92 Rumble? Come on.
Because some would say your promo style is really a throwback.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You really have an old school promo style. So that's fascinating to me.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting to me because a lot of my inspiration with my promos and things like that, like outside of Ric Flair, obviously, a lot of my inspiration comes from like contemporary either ideas or artists or things like that. So that's interesting to hear. I haven't heard that.
You could plop you right into, you know, mid-80s, you know, Charlotte, and you wouldn't blink, honestly. Honestly and truly, you really could. So that's absolutely fascinating. So you went right into the Attitude Era. Did you just go straight in head first, or was it, did you dip your toe in the water and then gradually get in?
Kind of gradually got in. I remember walking through the hall with a school. I was in elementary school, and people were doing the people's eyebrow and the crop chops and throwing up the middle finger for Austin, and I just never knew what it was. I knew it was a part of pop culture because everybody was doing it, but I didn't know that it was wrestling specifically until a few friends had mentioned it, and then I would see it, and I'm like, oh, this is cool, and I would kind of dip in and dip out. But yeah, it was right at the tail end of it, of the Attitude Era, when I kind of came in hard.
Now, this is a podcast where we talk a lot about live experiences, too. What was your first live wrestling experience?
My first live experience was a SmackDown show. They came to Atlanta, and I think, I want to say it was the Phillips Arena. It was either that or the Gwinnett Energy Center or whatever that's called. One of my friends, Brandon Foster, his dad had an extra ticket, and he asked me to go, and I couldn't breathe. I was so excited. And this was back when Brock Lesnar was here doing his first run.
Oh, man.
Cena was still the Doctor of Thuganomics. It was just a fun time, and it was really cool to see the ring for the first time and the stage. I hadn't decided to be a wrestler at that point yet, but you could just tell, you could just feel like how special it was. It's really hard to explain, but man, I was on I was on 10 the whole night.
Because I get the vibe from you, too, that the theatrics are really big with you. And the whole production is really big with you.
I'm a mark for that. I'm a mark for that. And I would say that proudly. The production, all the way down to the flyers, the font, the themes, the music, people's Titantrons. And I'm really big on the pageantry of it all. Yeah, for sure.
So were you hooked at that moment when you walked in that building? You said, "This is me. This is it. This is what I want to do." Basically, this is because I've heard that from a lot of wrestlers.
Believe it or not, no. That event happened in like late 2003. That was like fourth, fifth grade for me. At that point, I wasn't like, "Oh, I want to be a wrestler." I just knew this was really, really cool, and I'm a fan. So I didn't. Me wanting to become a wrestler, that didn't come until a few years later.
Okay.
To the day of WrestleMania 22 in 06. At this point, I'm in middle school. It's me and two of my best friends. One of their dads was really well off, so he would order the pay-per-views every month. We would go to his place and watch them. For WrestleMania 22, we were so excited. We got there super early, like around noon, and we were just so bored. We had nothing to do. And so we went out to that jungle gym in his subdivision, and me and my two friends, and we, you know, it was kind of like a square kind of thing in the middle. And me and them, we just kind of put on this really long, long triple threat match, and we were just out there having fun. And the more noise we made, the more people would come out, and we thought we were getting in trouble. But they were actually coming out to, like, watch us. And the longer we went, the more people in the neighborhood came out to watch. And I just remember it getting around 7:30, 8 o'clock, and WrestleMania was about to start. And I didn't want to stop, you know, wrestling for these people. And so that's when, like, I was watching Mania later that night, and I just kept thinking to myself, maybe I want to do this. Maybe this might be a thing. And I remember researching and seeing how much travel they did and how much money they made and how much influence they could have. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think I want to do this.
And you were how old at this time?
That kind of went. This was about seventh grade. So
really? That young?
Yeah.
And this, I mean, basically, you were backyard wrestling.
Right. And I had no idea that that's what it was even called. Mm-hmm. We were just doing it. We were just having some fun. I knew nothing about independent wrestling. All I knew was WWE at the time. I take that back. I did find TNA by that point. Mm-hmm. But other than that, yeah, that was about it.
Now, a lot of us sort of had to hide it from our parents, our wrestling fandom from our parents. Were your parents encouraging of your wrestling fandom? Like, you know, at least with my father, that's what we bonded over, you know, every Monday night was, you know, no matter what, my father and I, we could be fighting, we could be arguing, whatever, but every Monday night we sat down and wrestling was the one thing that we bonded over, and then every conversation sort of started from wrestling. With your parents, was wrestling a unifying thing, or was that something that was sort of taboo?
I want to say it was neither, to be honest. They didn't encourage it, but they didn't take it away from me either. They weren't, like, mad about it. They knew I really liked it, but I don't think they understood, like, the severity of how much I liked it. Like, they would buy the video games, you know, whenever we could. They would take me to the shows, but I think it was just kind of he likes this. Let's come on and do this with him. It wasn't – I don't think they knew how much I was in love with it.
When did they realize this was a thing that you were really serious about?
When I found the WWA 4. So, really? Yeah, it was around the same time as WrestleMania 22. So this is really, really early on. This is about...
Because you're 14. 06. Yeah.
Right. 06, 07-ish. So I'm thinking, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to become a wrestler, and I need to look up how this works. I Googled wrestling schools in Georgia, and the very first one that came up was the WWA 4.
Because you're from right in Atlanta, right?
Right. Yeah. I'm from Atlanta. And you have to be 18 to join. So I'm like 13, 14 years old. I'm like, damn it, I can't join just yet. But I found out that they do free shows every Thursday. So I'm like, oh, man. So I would beg my mom every Thursday. We would go out to that. And then when I got old enough to drive, I would ask to borrow a car and I would go out there. And I think that's when they started to kind of realize, oh, he's serious about this. He won't shut up about this. And my mom was like, I mean, that's cool, but, you know, you're about to graduate soon. You're definitely going to college, so don't get no funny ideas, that kind of thing. So I would go out to the shows every week, and that's how I kind of met Fox and his wife, Ashley. I met them early on. I met Black Baron early on. A lot of guys that came out of there. Apollo Crews, I met him there when he was UHA Nation. Mm-hmm. And just seeing him and Fox have those matches were great. Like, to be able to see that for free was just unfair. They were that good. And so when I graduated, I said, okay, I'm going to go to school right here in Atlanta, to Georgia State, and I'm going to train at the same time. I'm going to train to be a wrestler, and I'm going to go to school to get my degree.
Now, did you have other interests in school, too, or were you pretty much single-minded? Were you doing other stuff in high school as well? Were you doing other stuff in school as
yes.
well?
Yeah, I was doing a whole bunch of other stuff in high school and in college. I did a few contact sports in middle school, but by the time I got to high school, it was just swimming. I did mock trial. Mm-hmm. I did drama, as I mentioned earlier.
I'm doing mock trial, too, man. I'm a mock trial veteran as well.
It's fun.
Dude, it was a blast. You know, especially for public speaking.
Different stories. Right. Yeah. Right. And I think mm-hmm. that's where, so I'm doing all these things and I had no idea that it would help me out in the long run in wrestling. It was just something I was interested in. So I did my trial. I did SGA. I did drama. What else? When I got to college, I tried fashion and I really enjoyed that, doing runway fashion shows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of gives me that same kind of energy as far as like making my entrance or like having that something special about yourself when you make your walk, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's kind of similar to me. I was a radio personality for the radio station at Georgia State. I was DJ Mac and Cheese.
Totally see that, by the way.
So like all these little things that like I was interested in some crazy way helped me in wrestling, and I had no idea. It wasn't some maniacal plan. It just happened to all fall in line, and I'm so appreciative.
Well, it's
but
all
once
communication.
I got to Georgia State, though, yeah, it is all communication, and that's actually what I went to school for. I was mm-hmm. studying radio and TV because if I don't make it as a wrestler, I still want to be a valuable asset to the WWE in some kind of form of fashion. I just want to get in the door.
Yeah.
Some kind of way. And but when I got to Georgia State, it was a lot. So I said, okay, let me focus on graduating and get my degree first, and then once I graduate, I'll go ahead and start training.
So you even knew when you walked into Georgia State what I want to be as a wrestler. Like, did you you knew when you walked into Georgia State, wrestling's what I want to do. I'm going to fashion my major with the idea that I want to walk into WWE. Like, you were that
yes.
single-minded.
Yes.
That's
with
amazing.
The major, not with the extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. Like all of those were just different interests of mine. They helped me out in the long run, but I wasn't thinking about wrestling when I did radio station or fashion shows and stuff like that. But once for the degree and what I was studying, yes, that was all wrestling based. Yeah.
But you've had one goal since you were 14.
Basically, yeah.
that's amazing. And you can tell in your work as well.
Appreciate it.
So you got into WWE 4. Talk about that environment, because a lot of guys would come from there. A lot of guys talk about that. It's a heck of a school.
It is. It's a heck of a school, and I can't stress to you enough how intimidated I was, because I don't look like a wrestler, you know, and I was even smaller than what I am now. I came in the game and all these big guys are in there. Fox was just starting to take over the school. So me and David Ali, we started on the same day and we were his second and third students.
Really?
His very first one was Austin Theory. And Theory started maybe, I want to say, about 3 weeks before we did.
So you had no carryover with Mr. Hughes then?
Well, kind of. Okay. Mr. Hughes was there, but he was basically transitioning Fox into being that leader role.
Sure.
I didn't know it at the time, but Hughes was on his way out. Because I started in February, and he was gone by April.
Gotcha.
So it was basically mainly all Fox. And, you know, I would come in there and this big theory would walk up to me. And he was slamming me and doing all these things. It was very intimidating. And like I said earlier, I hadn't played a contact sport since middle school. So I wasn't used to getting hit. I wasn't used to falling down and getting slammed. And it really had to toughen me up. The first 3 months was definitely the hardest for me. So I took that first bump and I started to second guess everything. I was like, I don't know if this is for me.
And hurts. For guys who haven't seen you, you don't exactly look, no offense, you don't look like Austin Theory.
Right. No, I get it. I understand.
talk about what you walking in and there's Austin Theory, and Austin Theory is built a little bit different than you. Is there walking in going, oh shit, what did I get myself into? Or do you get that competitive fire and saying, you know what, I don't give a shit, I'm going to beat this guy?
No. It was no competitive anything. Okay. It was, holy shit, I am in trouble. It was a lot of fear, a lot of second guessing, a lot of doubt. I wouldn't say depression, but I was just really scared. I was just like, what am I doing here? Like, I don't look like a wrestler. I'm not an athlete. I haven't done anything special with a ball in years. Like, what am I doing here? And I said, that first bump kind of hurt. And I just remember thinking, oh, man, this isn't for me. But I had spent – it was $1,000 to join at the time. And I didn't have to come out of my pocket for anything, thank God. I had friends and family members who knew the dream since I was 14. And they all donated, and it all came together to where they paid for it, basically. And I was like, okay, well, I can't let those guys down, so I'll keep going just to see what happens, just to see if I can pick up on it. And around that three-month mark, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'm actually not that bad. I can do a few things, and... You know, I just kept it going just to see what happens. And then once we got to character development and promos and being able to be somebody else or turn yourself up to 10, that was what really drew me in. That's what hooked me. I was like, oh, I like this.
Because you, more so than maybe anyone, definitely anyone in the South, and maybe... You know, in the top 0.0001% in independent wrestling, you can talk. Where did that come from?
Thank you. I don't know.
Did you just pop out of the womb talking?
Like I said, I did. I mean, I used to get in trouble a lot when I was a child. Not because I was a bad child, not because I would get into fights, but it was always something I said. Either what I said or how I said it, I was getting in trouble for like that kind of thing. And then being in drama, you know, it taught me how to project and how to, you know, speak for theater and public speaking in college and the radio station and the gimmick to where I announce myself. That comes from playing the video games like as a child.
How did that happen? Talk about that. How did that happen?
So every year, you know, SmackDown, the game comes out, or it's WWE 2K now. But every year I would create my person, and obviously it was AC Mac. I would create AC Mac every year in the game. And I'm the type of guy, well, every match I play, I'm watching the entrances. I cannot have a match and skip the entrances. That's just not what you do. And when the people in the game would make their entrance, the announcers would announce the regular wrestlers just fine. But when that created wrestler would come out, they didn't really have any information for him. They would just be like, oh, and here's AC Mac. And I didn't like that. So during the entrances, I would turn the volume down. And I would actually announce myself, not the way I do it now, but I would announce it objectively as if I was the actual announcer.
Really?
And then it came from, it went to, yes, yes. I kid you not. I wish my brother was here right now. He could attest to it. He hated that.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And you're how old doing this?
Oh, this was like before 14. This is, I'm still in elementary school, middle school, all of that.
That's amazing.
Here Comes the Pain was what, 03? Yeah, that's when that started. And it went from that, it went from just announcing my created wrestler to announcing all of them, to where I kind of memorized their weights and their hometowns and their nicknames. And if I really, really liked them, like Triple H, like I would go to town on his intro because I just knew so much about him. And when we got to the WWA 4, like in the free Thursday shows, if you're not ready to debut yet, we use you elsewhere. You pay your dues. You're either a ref or a commentator or an announcer. And I was able to do all of these things. And I actually really liked announcing. And I had so much practice because that's what I did with the video game. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time debuting the show, believe it or not, it was a very last minute thing to do the whole Mr. Kennedy deal while I announced myself. But it just made sense. It just made so much sense. The way I debuted in the show as a heel, and they knew me as the announcer. So when I debuted as a wrestler, obviously the announcer would announce himself. Like, it just made sense. So I just ran with it.
Now, within WWE 4, there's so many guys there that we know of. Were any of the fellow trainees serving as mentors for you?
Yes.
Anyone take you under their wing?
Yes. Baron, Theory was the first one, even though he had only been there 3 weeks before me. He just caught on so damn fast and was so damn good that he was leaps and bounds ahead of us. So he took me under his wing. It was Prince Apollo. It was a few guys. And we listened to everybody, any and everybody who had advice. Even Cavron Canyon and his brother BMX Bobby B, they were there, I want to say maybe a year or two before us. So, you know, they were giving us advice as well. And it was just, it was open season. There's so much knowledge in that school. It's ridiculous.
And what is Fox like as a teacher?
Fox is very open, very open. It surprises me when I go places and I hear, oh, yeah, that's that Fox style. And I don't really know what they mean by that, because yes, he has his own personal like high flying style that he does, but he teaches everything. So it doesn't matter like what type of wrestler you are, he's got you and he can help you and he has advice for you. So if you're a ground and pound submission kind of guy, if you're a high flyer, if you're a striker, all of that, you know, he's got you on that. So it's just really cool to be able to present an idea to him and he's able to take it and then make it better for you. Like it's almost scary because he loves wrestling so much and he knows so much about it that he's able to upgrade anything in wrestling. It's crazy.
See, I think that's interesting because there's definitely guys who like I can see like the Skulk guys for instance. I see AR Fox right. all over them. But then I see guys like right. you and Alan Angels who I say, wow, they're AR Fox guys? That's amazing. That must be a really well-rounded school because you bear very little resemblance to the high, you know, I mean, you have high-flying elements, but you're not, for lack of a better term, crazy.
right. You
know, just flying off on right. the ring with little regard for your well-being, like those guys are. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at that Evolve show, for example, and those dudes were flying all over the ring, the Atlanta Evolve show, and I thought every one of them was going to kill themselves. And AR was jumping around like a crazy person and just absolutely loving it. And then I'm like, but also AC goes to this school and Angels goes to the school.
That's right.
And they work a little, for lack of a better term, smarter. And so there's a lot happening at this school here.
It is. I'm telling you, man, it's a lot happening. It's a melting pot. It's open Monday through Wednesday in the evenings, basically 5 until whenever they're ready to go home. Mm-hmm. And then Thursdays is a free show. And, you know, you get there and you're not forced to learn. Like, if you, if you're not a crazy person, like a AR Fox or a Leon Ruff or somebody, you don't have to learn that stuff. You don't have to be that guy. That's not you. Me personally, I don't even like going to the top rope. I don't do it. So I made that clear. Like, hey, when we're training, like, I'm not, you're not forced to learn just one way. It's such, oh, it's so much diversity out. We would have Fred come in, and when we were at the old building, we had a lot of Lucha guys. They would come on in, and you know, we had Lucha Day every now and then. So you would just, you would learn a lot of different things. And I've always thought that was the coolest thing, and I've always pushed the diversity the most at the school.
So at what point do you feel comfortable going out and working on your own? Is it an AR decision, or you say, you know what, I can do this?
That was an AR decision.
Really? Okay.
not like in a bad way, but it was more like him encouraging us to say, hey, you know, you got this, and you know, let's come on down here, let's have this show, let's see what happens. My very first show outside of the school was actually FIP down in Florida. Mm-hmm. It was me and Austin against, I want to get their name right, Roscoe Eats Lisa. I hope that's right. I hope,
yeah,
that's right.
They're real good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But and they were great. They knew we were new, and they worked with us, and we had a blast. We were so, well, I'll speak for myself, I was so nervous, but it came out really, really well. I was excited for it. And so, yeah, it was more of a him decision, because I damn sure didn't think I was ready.
Did it become a thing where it builds on itself, where you're twice as confident in your next match, you're three times as confident in your third match, or are you still, is it a slow progression?
For me, it was a slow progression. Just because I'm, just in general, I'm a very careful person, and I really like to have all my ducks in line before I make any moves. And what I like about the school is a lot of times they try to get me out of that comfort zone, whether it be Fox, whether it be Theory, or even Allen Angels himself. You know, they're like, you know, stop planning so much. Just do it. So they kind of helped with that. But yeah, it was a very, very slow progression for me. So let's say September of 2016 was my very first show outside of the school. And I don't think I got comfortable doing shows outside of the school till maybe about March or April of 2017.
Now, aside from, you know, obviously Fox and the people you trained with, who are your other influences? Who did you really want to model? When you said, I want to be a wrestler like ... who were the wrestlers you really wanted to be like?
Oh, my God. The Rock and Triple H.
Really?
Oh my God, especially The Rock, obviously because of his charisma. Mm-hmm. His charisma was able to move a crowd almost before he even got in the ring.
Can see that 100%.
Or before he even made his entrance. You know what I'm saying? And that, I love that. And then Triple H, I love how you can just see him thinking in the ring. Everything he did made sense or had a purpose. And that's what I try to model myself after. And when I debuted in the show, I didn't even have a finishing move. The Mac 10 wasn't a thing yet, but I knew I wanted to honor the pedigree in some kind of way. I knew whatever I did, I wanted to be reminiscent of the pedigree. So, and me and Austin kind of played around in the ring, and we came up with it together, actually, the Mac 10. And I've just used it ever since, and I've been very protective of it as well. I don't know if people have kind of picked up on that, but...
Oh, yeah.
I don't let a whole lot of people kick out of that one.
And it's recognizable too. And no one else is using anything like that.
Thank God, yes.
it's not a burning hammer, you know? It's not like it's not a super kick.
Right.
Yeah, it's not something everyone's using, so that's great. So at what point do you feel like, you know what, I'm starting to get this? Or do you not feel like you're starting to get it yet? At what point do you feel like I'm starting to get this?
As far as like the shows, like
as far as like, you know, school? you're kind of out there, you know, you're kind of out there on your own. You're starting to work shows. You say, you know what, I'm not half bad.
when I won my very first championship outside of the school, And that was the NCW Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Okay.
And that was a NCW in the Landmark Arena.
Okay.
And at the time, the show was every single Friday. So every Friday we were going up there, and it was just like getting those reps in, getting comfortable in front of a different crowd, you know, more detailed storylines, and it was a lot of fun. It was very, very good practice too. Very good practice. And that's when I started to kind of really, really feel myself. April of 2017 was when I won that title. And since then, so we're going on like 2.5 years now. Since then, I've had at least one championship around my waist since then. So I'm very, very proud of that.
Now, I started noticing you in action. When did you start in action right after that? Because I think Matt was working down in Anarchy for a little while. I think did he notice you down there? Was that how that worked?
He did notice me down there. Yes. Mm-hmm. So NCW, we did, that was like the NXT to Anarchy.
Yes.
And so when Anarchy had their big Christmas show in 2017, that's when I met Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And this was way before Action had even started. I had no idea who he was. And, you know, he was just being cordial backstage, and he was helping with the promos. And we, you know, we just kind of met that way. And I was like, okay, cool. And I thought nothing of it. And then I think I saw him again at Scenic City a few months later. And then he hit me up, and April of last year was the first Action show.
Mm-hmm.
And so he hit me up a few months before that and was like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about bringing this new promotion and blah, blah, blah. So, and at this point, I'm just trying to wrestle. There was no like guarantee that, oh, you're going to be champion and you're going to be this big deal. No, that wasn't really the plan. I was just supposed to be on the show in general.
Yeah. Well, Action's where I know you best from, and I think a lot of the people in this podcast know you best from. Mm-hmm. Does it feel like Action is maybe your home promotion at this point, or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, does that feel like where you feel like you're best known, you know, or do you feel, or is it Southern Honor, is it somewhere else, or is it, I mean, does that feel like your baby?
It definitely feels like my baby. Now, I will admit, it's not my only baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my only home, but it definitely is a home. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as where I think most people know me from, now that is a hard question for me to answer, because I'm not 100% sure. It might be Action, though, because I think they have a further reach with them being on independent wrestling TV.
Yeah, I think they're just getting a lot of really good exposure off independent wrestling TV.
Yeah, so I think Action might be a safe bet. I'm just not 100% sure as far as like where people know me from the most.
Mm-hmm. Talk about how that's organically grown within Action, just because we have the show coming up Friday night. You're defending the title. You're defending the title again Friday night, right? Who are you defending against?
Kurt Stallion.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, my memory has slipped. That's going to be a banger.
I'm excited. I've been doing my research, and I'm just like seeing, you know, what he has and what he brings to the table. And, man, that guy can go.
You just football pads for that one. I don't know if your chest protector is going to be enough for that. My God, that dude hits like a Mack truck.
Man. And I'm going to have to take it all. Jesus.
Dear Lord. Yeah, I forgot. Oh, my God. You're going to be wrestling against Stallion. Talk about how your evolution as a character in Action Wrestling, just because I've been at every Action show, I think, except for one. And
mm-hmm.
I've just been so impressed by your evolution within Action Wrestling. How have you felt yourself grow within Action to the point where now you're the champion and the torchbearer and, you know, are pretty much synonymous with the promotion?
Right, right. I love the growth, because I was the very first match for Action. You know, we mm-hmm. opened the show with me and Joey, and to kind of go from, I think people saw me as like, oh, okay, he's entertaining. He's like a Miz, kind of like, you know, he's in the mid card. You know, we definitely want him on the show. And I think I had that match with Theory in August in the main event, and that's still one of my favorite matches. It was so good, and I think a lot of people at that point said, whoa, no, we got a main eventer on our hands. And so from there, it just kind of escalated forward, and then we had the tournament for the strap, and luckily I was, you know, the one to win it for the first time. So I think the progression is pretty cool. I love to be able to kind of go back and kind of see the growth. I don't want to say from the bottom, but like, you know, from a relatively average standpoint to where I am now within action, I think it's pretty cool to see.
I was going to ask, is that theory match your favorite match? What would you say? That you said it's up there?
It's up there. It's almost impossible to pick a favorite match, but theory is definitely my favorite opponent. Every time we go at it, I learn something new. He's so good that he just makes anybody he's in the ring with better. And then with him traveling and being with Evolve and wrestling so many people that are even better than him, and then he comes back with that knowledge, it's like a free seminar. It's great, you know. So,
and you have that familiarity too.
All different ways. Yeah, the familiarity, that charisma. Not the charisma. What am I trying to say?
Just being able to work together, basically, just the...
Yeah,
the
chemistry. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, that chemistry. And it's just sometimes, you know, if we can go out there and something goes awry or not as planned, and we just know each other so well and we trust each other. That's a big thing, too. Mm-hmm. I'm really big on trust. I trust Austin Theory with the match. I trust him with my body. I trust him with my life. And so when we go out there, I can let loose. I can lay back because whatever, if anything goes wrong, we know we can fix it. I know your moveset. You know mine. I know your character. You know mine. And we can just go from there. We can have a good time.
To a similar extent, I know you recently worked Angels recently as well. Is he up there on that list as well?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Both of them are actually one of my best friends, like in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... and Angels is the same way. He is such a technician of the game. He's so underrated. And I'm going to say it again. He is so underrated. I really don't think people realize how hard he works. That man only thinks about wrestling. Everything he does is for wrestling. He's in the gym every single day. He's constantly coming up with different moves, different sequences and things like that. He's so good. And he's one of the guys that really pushes me to go out of my comfort zone, because I wrestle like WWE style. Like, that's kind of my thing. And
he's
more like Japan. He likes to push the limit a little bit. He likes to take it a step forward, you know. And sometimes he'll present these spots and I'm just like, I don't think that makes sense, or I don't like that. But once we actually try it in front of a crowd, things work.
Because you and him worked in front of 1,000 people a couple weeks back, right?
Yeah, man. Yes, we did. In front of 1,000 people, and we interacted with the likes of Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. I have still not over that. That's crazy.
I was going to say, that must have been checking off a lot of boxes for you.
Man, that little kid came out of me. Oh, my gosh. And to be able to call the spots backstage and to hear Jericho and Kenny Omega call our names, and like these, like they know who we are. And Jericho, you know, he mentioned us on his podcast afterwards and shouted us out. It was unreal. It's still unreal. We're only 3 years in. That's crazy.
How were they to work with, too?
Oh, easy. What?
No, amazing. No. I mean, like, were they professional to work with? Were they like good guys to work with? Were they good guys?
They were extremely good guys to work with, and it was so surprising because when we got back there, they kind of wanted to know who we were, like what our characters were, like what's your moveset, what do you do, are you comfortable taking this, or, you know, we have an opening here, what do you want to do right here? They really wanted like our input, which I was so shocked about, because in a situation like this, I was prepared to go in there and not say a word and just listen, and what are we doing? Okay, cool, got it. But no. They wanted us to be a part of it, and I thought that's what the coolest thing was about it.
And you main evented that show, correct?
Yeah. Me, Angels, and Shannon Moore main evented that show. Yeah.
Yeah, you main evented a show in front of 1,000 people that Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega were on. 3 years into the business.
Right.
Let's just put that in our pipe and smoke it, shall we?
Into the business.
Yeah, let's just soak that up for a second, shall we?
And it's so funny because my character is like so heelish and like, of course I would do that and blah blah blah. And I just want to put it out there, like Amon-Ra is the complete opposite. I'm very humble and just like, I still can't believe it. You know, I kind of feel, I was telling somebody else, I kind of feel guilty that I was even picked to be a part of it. Cause it's like you said, it's only been 3 years. Like, who am I to be?
Well, you worked at NXT taping too. What was that like?
I did. Oh, that was a huge ball of nerves. Oh, because so I drove down there. I had, you know, you have to come in a suit, call time is 1 p.m. They don't start the tapings until 7:30 that night. And I had a few friends that had did the extra spot before, but they weren't chosen for a match. They just were kind of hanging out and rubbing elbows and networking, which that's what I thought I was going to do. And I was prepared for that, and I was okay with that. I just wanted to be in the building, yeah. You know? I just wanted to get there. And so I got there, and they said, I spoke to Ryan, and he said, oh, you're Mr. Mackey. You know, you've got a match. You're in the third show, second match on the third show. You've got Dijak, fill this out. And he started to walk away. And I was like, oh, no, hell no. I got questions. Wait a minute. I'm doing what? I guess I'll go get my gear out of the car. Well, wait a minute. I was so nervous. Oh, my God.
It came out great, so though. Nervous. The match was fantastic. Oh,
yes, Dijak is a sweetheart, man. We talked for hours, and Norman Smiley was our agent, so that was pretty cool. And everything that they do is for the camera. It is unbelievable how detailed they are with, oh, well, you want to hit the move this way. You want to sell it that way so that camera can hit it. Hard cam, hard cam, hard cam. I swear to God, if I hear hard cam one more time, I'm going to scream. But it was just so cool to see all the stars. We got the change in the locker room. We were a part of the roster. I got to meet my, you know, one of my idols, Triple H. Shawn Michaels was there. I got to meet him. And it was just really cool to see how involved and detailed they are with that entire show, walking the entrances, discussing lighting, the writing team with the promos and the scripts. It was just a huge, huge machine.
I was going to say, for a production geek like you, that must have been a dream.
Oh my gosh. I could not. I just can't wait to go back. It was so great, and it was so much fun. Rhea Ripley, she's a sweetheart. She showed me where the taco truck was. I really had a blast.
Did you get any good feedback on your match as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I got good feedback. It wasn't a whole lot because it was a squash match.
Yeah.
They did like the way I sold things. They told me in the beginning, we kind of did not a standoff spot, but just kind of a little character thing to where I was showing my fear. They didn't want that to be as long as it was, mm-hmm. which I'll take the heat for that. I did that on purpose because I wanted more screen time. Hello. Yeah. But
your AC Mac, yes.
You know, I'm trying to get noticed. And so that was pretty much the only critique they gave. They liked my entrance, which I know that's not a big deal, but I was proud of that because normally jobbers don't get entrances. You know, they come back from commercial and you're already in the ring. And B, they told me at the very last possible second that you're getting an entrance. And I freaked out because all I really do is my intro. Like, I come to the ring, I snatch the mic, and I just deliver mm-hmm. my intro. I don't really have a pose. I don't really do an entrance. So I had to do something random on the spot, and I cringe every time I watch it back, but it is an entrance.
And it's thinking on your feet.
Right. It is thinking on your feet. They're throwing you in the fire for sure.
So you're 3 years into the business, 15 championships. You've already worked NXT. What are your goals from here?
They're so generic, and I'm really weird about setting goals and publicly stating goals. Mm-hmm,
okay.
Are
you a 1 year, 5 year, 10 year goal? You know, are you the type of person who writes those out? Okay, yeah.
Oh, I don't write them out, but I do have a mental, I definitely want to be in WWE by this age, or you know, things like mm-hmm. that. But as far as what I want to happen by the end of the year, I don't know. I don't like setting those. Because, like, I definitely wouldn't have thought I was doing the Jericho and Omega thing.
Yeah.
Like, you just never know what comes up. And I don't want to shoot too far or shoot too little. I'm bit, like, I mean, like I said, I'm very cautious and very, like, careful. I'm sorry, but I don't know. Yeah.
Now, I know that you know, we have action on Friday.
Right.
And then and you're facing Kurt Stallion there. Obviously, one goal is to retain your title.
Right.
I'm sure another big goal and one thing I want to talk about was Scenic City Invitational. Now, this is your first Scenic City.
Right, right. In the actual tournament, yeah.
Yeah, in the first Scenic City in the actual tournament. You have your pick. You don't have to reveal it, obviously, but this is a big spot for you, I guess is my general question here. This is a big opportunity for you. This is my hometown. This is my baby, is Scenic City, and we have hundreds of people fly in from all around the country. There's a big spotlight on Scenic City. Talk about what the Scenic City Invitational means to you as a wrestler.
It's a gateway. It's so funny because so many people downplay the South, and so many people are just trying to get out of the South instead of making your name known here. Like that, to me, this is like a gateway. This is how you make it to that next level. You can't do it without that foundation. And I think the South is the foundation. The Scenic City Tournament is going to be so many, like you said, so many people coming in from all over who aren't aware of who AC Mack is. And so I cannot wait to show them the very core and the very essence of what AC Mack does, who he is, why he is the way he is. And me personally, I want to bring story to the tournament. I don't, because tournaments are tournaments. Yeah. It's a tournament. but I like story within the tournament. That's what I want to bring. I think the best example would be to use Pete Dunne. What he did in the UK tournement.
The first
you
one,
remember
yeah.
that?
Mm-hmm.
He like.
Yep.
Yeah, he like attacked the guy on the stage, and so now you have a legit heel, and you want him to lose, or you want him to win, or you the guy that he attacked. Oh, who is that? Does he get his revenge? Like now you have all these questions that need to be answered through the tournament. I want it to definitely mean something.
And you have intrigue so because you won the Rumble without eliminating anybody,
right?
You get and therefore you get to pick who you want to face in the first round,
right?
Conceivably, if you're smart,
you can shape
this whole tournament and you could, quote unquote, coast your way in.
Right.
You know, that's a storyline. That's intrigue.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see what we come up with. I'm excited to see the reaction, from all the fans. That's always the best part. So. We're definitely gonna have some fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be an absolute blast. It's my favorite weekend of the year. It really is, just because the fan experience and what happens, the quality of wrestling that goes on. You were in Futures last year, right? Yeah. You were in the Scramble last year. You won the Scramble.
Yeah, I was
last year.
Right.
You were there. Yeah. You won the Scramble last year.
I pinned Marco Stunt in the Scramble.
That's correct.
And then that's what earned me a spot in the Rumble.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that now because there's that famous picture of everybody laying on the ropes, which is maybe my favorite wrestling picture ever.
That was not planned. I'm standing there and I'm doing my entrance and I turn around and I see that picture of just all of them just stacked on top of each other. Just I almost lost it.
How do you not break at that point? No.
I was like, look at these fools. Just it was so funny to me. It was so funny. I still have that picture on my phone, actually.
Oh, I took it. I'm the one who took it. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for capturing that moment.
No problem. So you have Scenic City coming up. You have action coming up. You're starting to become a regular on Southern Underground Pro.
Yes. Southern Underground Pro.
Which is a very fun promotion. Yeah. We had Kevin Koo on here two weeks ago. That is that's a different promotion than Action, to say the least. Slightly different atmosphere.
Slightly is an understatement. Yeah. Holy. You know, it's very gritty, man. That's an adult crowd. It is. It's in a bar. You know, you get to let loose a little bit, and they are not shy. They let you know what they feel, and I love it. I 100% love it.
You're working Southern Honor. Where else are you working?
So this weekend I'm debuting in Blueprint down in Deerfield Beach, Florida. It's like cool. Near Miami. So that'll be a little bit of a drive.
Could be worse.
So yeah, we got that going. I'm in and out of Pure in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm in some talks with a few people. I don't want to give too much away, but I'm in some talks with a few people in Indiana. And so yeah, we're just trying to get as many eyes on me as I can.
So we got to get you more around the country. You know, get you up north. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, up north more consistently, because I've been there a few times, but I would definitely love to go more. I love Providence. I would have never thought that I would even care about Rhode Island, but I it was a very, very nice city, and I would love to go back. And then maybe a weekend this year was just a blast.
Because you worked Jake Atlas, right?
Jake Atlas and Fred Yehi in the same day.
My God.
In the same day. I was on such a high, and both matches were great. I just felt so good about myself. I really did.
Have those made tape? Because I want to see those matches real bad. Fred one obviously made tape. That was a heck of a match at the Family Reunion show. But has the Jake match made tape? Because I want to see that.
Yes. The Jake one is on YouTube. It was the Matter of Pride show.
Okay.
And they have like their own YouTube channel. Cool. And it's like on there. Yeah.
Fantastic, because I heard that one went down, and that sounded like those are you guys are two talented people who are both going places, and that's a match I want to see, and that's a match probably everyone wants to see because you guys are just
he's so good.
Well, he's blowing up at GCW now.
Yes, he's blowing up a lot of places. He's out there on the West Coast, if I'm not mistaken. I kind of don't want to say because I'm not 100% sure, but I thought I saw him do something overseas as well. But he is definitely blowing up, and with me being in the ring with him, I completely 100% understand why he deserves everything he's getting. He's that good.
Well, you do too, man. You absolutely do too. You're absolutely killing it. Anything else you want to plug? Anything else you want to say? Plug your Twitter, plug your social media, plug anything else?
Yeah. So everything is AC Mac in some kind of form or fashion, AC_Mac. Or AC-Mac. That's the Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter. Facebook is like my actual name. It's Amen-Ra Mackey, AMEN-RA. I promise you, if you type that in, I will come up.
I have the most boring birth name ever, by the way. It's not fair. Your parents just killed it, by the way.
Yeah, my dad went all in. He's so extra, but
no, that's amazing. I'm just like, shit, my name's Ben. Christ. Your name's Amen-Ra. Like, it's not even fair. It's not even fair. You're born for greatness, literally. Name of the sun god, and here I am just like boring-ass dude name. Christ.
Yeah, my dad was like, yeah, we're definitely going in. I feel something great here. Yeah. This is what we're doing.
No, and now you've held 15 championships in 3 years. What's the moral of the story?
Right. Yeah. I didn't have a choice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, I think I hit all my social media there. So just follow me. And all my social media is all strictly wrestling, except my Twitter. I guess a little personal on Twitter sometimes, but everything else for the most part is my wrestling. If you want to catch me or see any old stuff, that's exactly where you can find it. And yeah, be on the lookout for bigger and better things in the future, and new things and debuts and as well. So that's what I've been working on recently.
Awesome. AC, you're one of my favorite wrestlers to watch on the planet, and you are definitely someone to watch coming up. I can't wait to see you Friday, man.
All righty, man. I can't wait to see you as well. We got a banger for you, man. It's
going
to be good.
Yeah, wear a football helmet and the chest pad and wear as much padding as possible.
I might just keep the vest on. I just keep the vest on.
If you don't keep the vest on, you're an idiot, frankly. You're facing Kurt Stallion. My God.
Oh, man. This is going to be a doozy.
Godspeed. All right, man. I'll see you Friday.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, you have a good one. Thank you.
You too. Bye.